Broadcasting from high atop Rocky Road in Moab, Utah, this is KZMU News. I'm Emily Arntzen. On today's show, we talk about a new documentary called Demon Mineral that screened at Star Hall in Moab last night. The film shows the devastating consequences of uranium mining on the Navajo Nation, where over 500 mines are still unremediated. The Navajo Nation outlawed uranium mining in 2005, but today, thousands of people continue to suffer from radiation exposure and contaminated soil and water. We talked to director Hadley Austin and cinematographer Yoni Goldstein about the film. This is Hadley Austin.
There's currently no active uranium mining on the Navajo Nation, but for the first time in about a decade, there are newly active uranium mines around the edges of the Navajo Nation, two in Utah, one in Arizona. And we do expect that the Navajo Nation's ban on uranium mining, we expect that that probably will be challenged. There's certainly a huge push nationally to sort of reinvigorate uranium mining. The contamination that these mines wrought will be there long after we're gone, and that's not a reason not to work to improve them. But these are forever problems. It's a reason not to open new mines, and it's a reason not to reopen old ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the film, you interview a lot of people who have suffered from radiation exposure. Can you tell us a little bit about what sort of health problems this has caused for people?
So the interesting thing about public health is that it's really hard to say like what single cause, you know, an illness or an ailment derives from. But what we do know is that exposure to radioactive contamination damages your genes. It's intergenerational damage. It is very damaging to the thyroid. People who lived near places where there were a lot of unplugged radon vents, they have a lot of respiratory ailments. Of course, it can cause lung cancer. There's a lot of kidney and liver failure.
Someone that you interviewed in this documentary, I think her name is Helen Nez. Mm-hmm. Can you tell her story and sort mm-hmm. of, yeah, what she experienced?
Helen is from a little bitty town near Canyon de Chelly. And that is also where America's richest and most useful uranium ore is. And when she was a girl, they found uranium essentially on her land. And, you know, she was young. She doesn't recall a lot of the specifics. But what she does remember is being tasked with walking the donkeys, carrying the explosives up to open up the mine. And her husband worked in the mine. And eventually, you know, she had many children, and they started dying these very difficult, long, slow deaths, but at very early ages. And most of her children passed. And, you know, she took them to many hospitals trying to find answers, you know, hospitals on the Navajo Nation and eventually hospitals in Albuquerque. She had been accused of drinking while pregnant. She'd been accused of having incest, which was not true. But eventually someone took her seriously, and she came to realize through this doctor that living near the mine was what was killing her children. And just like a side note about the biological reality, this makes sense. Because she was grown mostly before the mine opened, she was actually at lower risk for the kind of damage and that her children experienced, because they were literally formed in a contaminated area, which was her body. Mm. Children born in contaminated areas have health impacts that those who were born and moved into them don't have. Mm-hmm. It's different. You know, eventually she filed paperwork and got some help, and she was relocated with financial assistance not far. You can still see where the mine was. It's not far, but into a much safer location.
How common is a story like that? That's a very severe case, but how many people does this affect?
Tens of thousands? I mean, a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, there's over 500 mines on the Navajo Nation. Mm-hmm. They cover the breadth of the Navajo Nation. It's really hard to find an area that's not impacted. Some areas are impacted more than others. Obviously, Church Rock, where there was a huge mine event, is really adversely impacted. Cameron, Arizona, because of just the nature of the mining there and its location and its impact on the water.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we actually talk about water for a second and what the effects of this has been on the Navajo Nation's water resources?
Yeah. You know, obviously, there's a lot of water underground out there. You know, we're on the edge of one of the largest aquifers in the world. And I've always been sort of moved by the fact that it's very old water. You know, mm-hmm. some of this is like fossil water. It's thousands of years old, but it's in the ground, like in a Tupperware of earth and mineral. And when you puncture that Tupperware trying to get to the uranium, You contaminate it, and much of the water is contaminated. And it's why when during COVID, the Navajo Nation was in the news for not having running water, and in something like 30% doesn't have access to running water. That's why. It's about contamination. It's about not being able to use the well that's in your backyard.
Who is responsible for the remediation of these mines?
The federal government. Most of the cleanup money comes from Superfund. In some instances, the mine ownership can still be traced, but many of these mines, some of these mines were dug by just people. The Mining Act that allows people to prospect for uranium hasn't been updated since 1872. So some ownership of the mines, it's really hard to trace.
And how many of those 500 or so mines have been remediated?
Three. Just to remediate them, it would take over 2,000 years.
Yeah, we have a remediation site in Moab that's just a couple miles north of town. Yeah, so it wasn't a mine, it was a mill. And I think it's interesting being here, the legacy of uranium, you know, there's this mythology. It was like the good old days when the economy was really good. And those stories of the environmental and the health consequences don't get told so much here. And I think, you know, people have been a lot less affected in terms of their health here than on the Navajo Nation. But yeah, it's just interesting how those stories sort of solidify into a history, and not a question, just a comment on that. But
I'm sympathetic to that too. You know, I'm from, like, before I moved to Arizona as a teenager, I lived sort of in the foothills of coal country, and, you know, it's a really real thing. Economies shifting and people feeling that shift in a way that is material and painful. And I think we all are living, you know, in many ways, like a less abundant life in some ways than the generation before us. And I think that those are complicated feelings. The thing about mining is that every community deserves a better economic engine than a mine. And every community deserves a better economic engine than a uranium mill, because they are so dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Just the concept of the half-life of uranium and the length of time it takes to remediate a place can make you feel really nihilistic, and maybe you feel differently.
I do feel it's important never to wasteland a place. It's important to understand also that a place has its own inherent value, whether it's safe for humans or not. We did an interview with Anna Rondon that didn't make it into the film, but she said, "We're just doing what we need to do to survive, and Mother Nature will be just fine."
Yeah.
And I think that that's important to think about too.
Can we talk about the cinematography for a little bit?
Sure.
So a lot of the film is in black and white and kind of this glowing trail cam effect, but it is really ethereal and these people are kind of angelic. Can you talk about the reasoning behind that effect?
Yeah, absolutely. We decided that every landscape that was a contaminated landscape would be shot in black and white infrared. Infrared, for those who don't know, is part of the light spectrum that extends beyond the visible light, beyond like what the naked human eye can see, where you can see heat, where you can see light in a different way. The human body, the animal body will sort of glow. You can see ribbons of radon gas escaping from the ground. It was also the black and white images sort of spoke to the earlier history of cinema history, right? Like John Wayne films and those like Western films, which captured these same landscapes and used black and white framings and compositions.
Yeah, it's really beautiful metaphor of trying to, using this technique that is maybe used as government surveillance or could be used to see radon gas, like you were saying, you know, to demonstrate what are we not seeing in this environment that's harming these people. You also brought up the John Wayne clips that you used in the documentary. A lot of those John Wayne movies were filmed in this area as well. Can you talk about why you included some of those clips?
Two reasons. One is I always thought the story about the John Wayne curse was like really funny.
Oh, what's the John Wayne curse?
Well, so a lot of the people who worked on those films died young of cancer. And there's this sort of Hollywood legend thing that's like the films were cursed. And really it's like, well, they were wandering around here and there and these places where there's a lot of uranium mining, where the water's contaminated. The air's got like radioactive dust blowing around. But also it was because we were making an anti-Western. For folks who haven't seen the film, everyone in it is Diné except for Secretary of Interior Holland, who is Pueblo. So every expert you encounter is an indigenous expert. And in that way, we are making an anti-Western in terms of who gets to speak and who gets to tell their story. And those Westerns that we were referencing, they were telling these largely untrue stories of conquest over a land and people that ultimately hasn't borne great fruit.
You've been listening to an interview with director Hadley Austin and cinematographer Yoni Goldstein about their new film, Demon Mineral. If you missed the screening in Moab last night, you can find more information about how to watch the film in today's show notes. And that's it for KZMU News today. Get your grassroots, community-powered journalism weekdays on the airwaves at noon and 6 p.m. You can also find KZMU News anytime online at kzmu.org or wherever you listen to podcasts.